I took an existing traditional family business, you know, like very local, and I pivoted it to a venture-backed, hyper-growth online business. It didn't really make sense. A lot of it, people didn't understand, but in my own heart, I knew that this was the future. And I believe that if I want to continue being on the cutting edge, really, you know, fulfill my potential of what I can do in this industry, that's what I need to do.
Welcome to Perpetual, where you'll get the hottest takes and insights on what's happening in the constantly shifting world of media and marketing. I'm Adam Ryan. Let's go.
Yossi, I'm so happy you're here, man. Long time coming. And I think this is our fourth or fifth call, but first time ever face-to-face. I'm glad we're here.
Adam, excited to be here. We finally made it happen.
I know. Well, for those that don't know who Yossi Levy is, this is the car dealership guy. I kind of like the joke about my level of cultural relevance of how I judge somebody of like, are they really making impact on culture? Is I'll call my cousin who's like 15 years younger than me and I'll be like, hey, who are some people you like think are interesting on Twitter? And then I'll ask my dad who's 70 years old. And you've come up in both. So you're like, out of all my guests, I don't know if we've had someone as culturally relevant to the Twitter platform as yourself. And I think a lot of people, you started to share your story more and more as who you are and what you're doing. But I think your journey's just been incredibly fascinating. You're born in the car sales industry and cut your teeth at your father's dealership. But help us set the scene a little bit. Besides kind of the roots of who you are, your journey of through this life of living in the auto industry, what was kind of your call to adventure here to take the next step in a car dealership?
If I take you back, right, started in the car business and grew up in this small used car lot, right? Think 10 cars on the lot, like something very small, just kind of for the family, you know, to put food on the table. I was in college, going to go to corporate finance, ended up sticking around. And within a couple of years, I was really leading the company. I say leading because, again, we're like five people. So there wasn't much to lead, but there was something. I spent the next 4 years growing that traditional used car business in Philadelphia. Grew it to about $28 million in sales. We were profitable, bootstrapped, had a nice used car business going for us. Things were great. I couldn't sit still. A lot was going on at the time. I'm kind of encapsulating 1 year here into like a sentence. But I just saw that we were increasingly selling cars to consumers. And these consumers, they were essentially buying these cars sight unseen, or they would come on the lot and they would end up choosing a car on our website that was not physically on the car lot. It was at a storage lot that we had down the street or somewhere because we had so much inventory at this point. So I had this insight. I said, why do I need to be confined to just a little lot in Northeast Philadelphia? If people are anyways buying cars that are not here, why can't I sell cars all over the place? That's how I had the idea for Get a Car. And Get a Car was a venture that I ideated over like 6 to 12 months, which the premise was essentially to be an online auto retailer. This was around 2017, 2018. It was still not that common. Carvana had just gone public, you know, a couple $100 million valuation. It was still very nascent. And so I did something very non-traditional. I took an existing traditional family business, you know, like very local, and I pivoted it to a venture-backed, hyper-growth online business. It didn't really make sense. A lot of it, people didn't understand, but in my own heart, I knew that this was the future. And I believe that if I want to continue being on the cutting edge, really, you know, fulfill my potential of what I can do in this industry, that's what I need to do. And so in 2018, I launched Get a Car. You know, no venture experience, no tech experience. I started building a tech team, spent the next 4.5 years building this online auto retailer, similar to the likes of Carvana, Vroom, Shift. I'm sure you've heard of these names. Over those 4 years or so, I raised close to $60 million of venture. At our peak, we were valued at close to $225 million. We did close to $100 million in sales in 2021, you know, 200 employees. I mean, it was a big business. We built it quickly, tripled almost every single year. And then 2021 hit. We're coming off of our biggest raise yet. Cars are flying off the lot. I'd say around July 21, we peaked. And by December, things were in shambles. Why? Well, the market was way too overheated. We didn't have the cash coffers that our competitors did. We couldn't compete online. We couldn't acquire customers profitably anymore. We were starting to go through an M&A process. We were hoping to get bailed out by a public company. That didn't work out.
And so by November, December 21, I find myself going from the hottest thing in town to trying to figure out, holy shit, how do we cut burn and how do we survive? Because who knows if we'll ever even be able to raise another dollar. And so the layoff started. And at that point, that was a very tough period for me, right? Again, you're going from the hottest thing in town to like complete opposite. You know, what do you do? Well, I'm a very creative person and I needed something to give me that, you know, creative stimulation or whatever you want to call it. And so in December of 21, I'm sitting in bed one night, right? Like this has been the worst month ever. All it is like, you know, laying off multiple rounds. We didn't have much experience in layoffs. So we did the rookie mistake of doing them in slow drips. I mean, I can give you like 50 things we did wrong. But needless to say, I'm sitting in bed. I see, you know, some Twitter accounts that are sharing insights and whatnot. And I say, you know what? Like, I can do this. It sounds fun. I've always liked like the media side of the business, the auto business. Let me just share some insights. And so that was my entrance into this entire media world. I went from a family business to a venture-backed business. And little did I know that I would end up building a media business. That was not the vision at the time. At the time, it was, hey, let's start a little anonymous social media account where I can share stuff, have fun, be creative, which I'm not being creative right now at work. I'm doing financial engineering, layoffs, you know, downsizing, trying to cut costs, but also, you know, just do this and let my mind kind of, you know, clear my head a little bit. And so that was how everything really started. It started as just a Twitter account.
When you were running Get a Car, from what I saw, it was a really well marketed product. You were doing really strong digital media campaigns. It was featured pretty prominently. Was there anything you pulled or learned from that experience that you're like, this is going to help me? Or did you just really see them as like two totally different entities of like, I'm just going to like share this as a hobby. And then you had this natural experience from running the marketing side of Get a Car.
Car dealership guy at the time was just a way for me to vent without putting my stakeholders at risk. There wasn't much that I poured it over other than just sharing my day-to-day experiences, right? From 13 years in the auto retailing business, traditional used cars online. I just saw a lot, right? You're raising money from some big investors, you get exposed to big CEOs, right? This is stuff that the average person is not exposed to and people want to know, right? We live in a day and age where there's just more transparency than ever. People are interested. People are curious. And I never believed that transparency should hurt a dealer or a consumer. Even back at my traditional car lot days, I would make these YouTube videos where I would educate customers. And I always believed that, you know, you can do this positively. It didn't make sense to me. It didn't make sense to me that a consumer doesn't have to know what adds value to their trade-in when they're trading in a car. All these little things, I was like, wait, why does that matter? Like, you know, it's not going to move the needle much anyways, and it's going to make them trust you better. You know, at Get a Car, we marketed very aggressively. We tested a lot of things. Ultimately, there was a lot of things we did wrong. First of all, we tried to sort of force our own product market fit. We believed we had product market fit, when in reality, we didn't. It was this early start where we were spending more money. Our unit economics were still profitable. We overgrew too quickly, right? It was the heyday of fundraising investors, also grow, grow, grow. We moved too quickly. We didn't have time to really nail our offering, and our value proposition was just weaker compared to our competitors. Incrementally, we couldn't compete with a Carvana that had more inventory on its website, was offering more assurances, had better unit economics, could throw more money at Google. I mean, there were so many things that we couldn't compete with, but it just kept compounding. Because when you're small, you can find customers here and there, and you think you have product market fit, but that was actually a mistake for us. And so if anything, I would say we jumped too quickly into paid marketing, and that actually ended up hurting us.
And the transition to Car Dealership Guy, kind of ironically, not a lot of competition on Twitter of real insights being shared. You went from one space where you couldn't win because of competition to a space that there was essentially zero credible competition. When did you feel like you had, I call content market fit, but product market fit essentially for a Car Dealership Guy? What was that moment?
That happened within the first like 2 weeks.
Wow.
I've never been a very active person on social personally. But when I launched Car Dealership Guy, I started sharing insights and I was racking up thousands of followers within the first 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks. It was obvious to me at that point that there was a thirst. People were craving insight into this market. Now you have to ask yourself why. Well, if you take yourself back end of 2021, car prices are at all-time highs. Monthly payments are at all-time highs. Markups are this new thing that people are not used to. They have to pay crazy prices for cars. People don't know what's happening. Should you buy a used car? Should you buy a new car? Should you finance the car? Should you pay cash? There is so much uncertainty in the market. For the first time in decades, arguably the most uncertain time in auto, that people were looking for that uncle that understands cars, I call it, like that person that they can lean on and trust. And here I am, came in with, I don't care. I don't want to monetize this early on. Like, I don't care about selling you a course or like it. It didn't even matter to me. I just knew that, hey, I'm having fun. It's keeping me creative. I'm doing something productive, right? I'm not a saint, right? I know that I'm accruing some form of capital. In this case, I'm accruing social capital via followers, right? So I'm compounding something. Let me just keep building.
You know, it's funny. We talked in July of 22, I think, for the very first time. And I looked at my notes before this. And I remember one hanging up the call and being like, it's going to be huge. It's just going to be massive. And I just believed it. And I had it written down. You know, I think one of the things that people don't realize is you said a couple of weeks. I think most of the time, you know, within a month, if your content's on point. Now, that doesn't mean you can't iterate and get better. I've told the story. My first million took a very long time before it even like got to remotely the success that it had. It had a lot of iterations. But once you know, it's so fast. You feel it. You can like get that sense. And, you know, you had it in July 22. I remember just feeling like, wow, this person's on it. But you were not monetizing because you had Get a Car still. And I think that was such a unique position that you were in a great way. But it's like, why these hobbyists turn into amazing media companies? Because you have this room to have content first in this like authentic, non-commercialized way.
If you look at my content today and you look at my content 2 years ago, I don't want to say it's light years different, but it's incredibly different because I reinvented the persona of car dealership guy. I reinvented myself every 3 months, right? Let me explain what that means. And we had a conversation that was very relevant to this early on when you said, hey, you should really think more about B2B. I started out, my wedge into the market was B2C. B2C is everywhere. Consumers are everywhere. They're a lower value audience than B2B, right? We all know this, but they're everywhere. And so if you could offer something to a consumer for you know, extended period of time, and especially if it's free, you can build a really big following. The key here is like, I didn't think too far. I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to build too many consumers. And for me, it was just about I'm compounding. Let me keep compounding. The opportunity will come. And so I started out appealing towards consumers. By 25 to 50,000 followers, it was clear to me that I can actually do more by sharing just my day-to-day insight for the business owners, how I navigated hiring and blah, 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 blah. By 50 to 100,000 followers, it was clear to me that the investor community and the hedge funds were gravitating to me. And so I started sharing a more economic perspective. Hey, supply is at all-time highs. Here's what I believe is going to happen. Here's why I believe it's going to happen. And by the way, here's what I'm seeing on the ground floor, right? I'm a practitioner. I'm on the ground floor. I'm at auctions, da-da-da-da-da. And by 100,000 followers, it was clear to me now that I tapped into the dealer community. And to me, our conversation really resonated early on. I asked myself, right? I sat with myself one day, and this was actually more than one day, but I continuously asked myself a couple of things. I said, what can I offer asymmetrical value to the market, right? What can I offer insights content that is truly unique? I also asked myself, what has the most barriers to entry? Consumer content, stuff like that. I mean, a dime a dozen. Go on Google today. There's so many people talking about consumer tricks. But on top of all that, I said, what's interesting to me? You know, I get invited to podcasts all the time where they want to talk about, hey, what's the easiest way to buy a car, sell a car? And like, I'm like, guys, like, I'm not interested in this. Like, I am not your guy for that. There's other people that are way better at it. Talk to me about the market. Talk to me about the economy. Talk to me about the business. I'm a business guy. I don't care about cars. I never cared about cars. I love the business though. And so it was a constant reinvention, but it was done very deliberately because I had to ask myself a couple things. I said, look, I'm spending time in something, right? I want to invest my time in something that's going to reach some reward, whatever that reward is. This is not a charity, right? I love doing this. I love giving insights. I love helping, but I also want to, you know, be rewarded for it. And so I asked myself, how can I build a moat? How can I build something that's a durable brand? And when you offer asymmetrical value, you offer something that is more niche and scarce, which is B2B insights in a specific vertical, you're actually interested in it a lot more than just consumer stuff. That's how you build a winning brand, in my opinion.
You know, we wrote this down in 2021 that we deeply believe, and still to this day, is like the way to actually win B2B in an efficient way that allows you to get scale and credibility fast. Because this is the thing, you know this, B2B is old, stodgy, and they have a moat. These trade associations, trade publications, the print. When you have a 50-year, 70-year track history, they're just hard to take down, no matter how crap their content is. It's just hard to get people to switch and not recognize brand. It's just how it goes. What you did is something I just like, so few people know how to do. It's something I just like love watching, is you go B2C to B. You take an area, you appeal to the masses by having expert insights of something that actually they resonate with. The Wolf of Franchise is a perfect example for this, but we do this, we think about this all the time of like, how can you make something that your core ICP won't necessarily resonate with, but guess what? Everyone's like watching. And then once your core group comes in, one, they're like, wow, that's a shit ton of followers. Something's going on. And then they read and like, oh, this person's not a joke. They fucking know what they're doing. And now you actually have the moat because you have the reach and credibility of the consumer side, but now you have the trust of the B2B. And it's the only way today, in my opinion, really to like capture that market quickly without M&A. If you're going to build, this is the route you have to do. And you've like perfected that in so many ways. I think the iteration piece is important because that journey of B2C to B, your audience shifts and evolves. And so like
big time,
it's okay. And you're going to see churn, you're going to see like disengagement, but it's actually just getting your highest purchasing power audiences, you know, filtered through. And that's totally fine.
I sat for weeks and wondering like, is anything going to come out of this? Right? Like my family is like, what are you doing on this like Twitter app all the time? People were confused. Like, oh, that's cute. You have a little Twitter account. But again, if you're like an entrepreneur or like if you see value compounding somehow, you can't like run away from that. Right? You say, I'm doing something right. I don't know what the future is going to hold. Let me just build it. And over time, we can figure out how we shift, you know, the direction or whatnot.
That July 22 conversation, there was two things that we talked about it. B2B and the power of that, of how, you know, I explored car dealerships. I now have it on my X list, just so you know, because the moat has been made. I can't compete. But the other thing that we talked about back then, you were not on a video call. I didn't know who you were. You didn't even tell me your name. And, you know, you were still like, get a car. And now, you know, the exposure side, I totally get it. But we talked about you. I was like, you get a lot more trust if people know who you are. And you made a huge announcement, an absolutely awesome video of who the fuck is car dealership guy. Tell us the thought process, because you're incredibly intentional with every step that you do. What was really the thought process and then the actual process to reveal your identity?
So I ran into an issue where in April 23, I launched a podcast. So my voice was out there to the world at this point. I said, I want to evolve this brand and I have to do that in other forums. Like text can only get you so far. I remember Anthony Pompliano was DMing me and he said something that stuck with me so hard. He said, Yossi, video is the most intimate form of connection with your followers. And I remember seeing that. And like for some reason that put like a chip on my shoulder. Because I said like, fuck, like I'm not on video and I want to be the best. And how can I be the best if I'm not on video? And so I sat there for months. And well, I launched a podcast, right? I went to audio and I started building credibility. Now, I didn't rush to like reveal who I was. And at this point, like it was already, the Get a Car was winding down. Like I knew that there was maybe an opportunity here. I didn't even know that car dealership guy was going to be an actual like legit business that I was going to do full time. Winding down Get a Car, you know, doing my best to kind of wrap that up as best as possible. Literally have no idea what I'm going to be working in 6 months. But I know again that I have, as one of my prior board members said, oh, you have this asset, an asset. Well, to me, it's like everything, but it was an asset, right? That I was having fun with. So I'm winding all that stuff down. And now fast forward even further, it's September 23. And I had built a lot of credibility by now, right? I was anonymous. No one knew who I was, but people judged me for my content. I was not judged for being Yossi, for being this tech entrepreneur guy that failed or this used car dealer. I was judged for my content. And people really, really like the content. And so I just said, look, like I ran that playbook as long as I could. I said, let me just continue going with it. But it got to a point where I started feeling like it's actually hurting me being anonymous. because I would get on calls. People want to partner with me. You know, I want to bring even, you know, more influential people on my podcast. And it's like, you're starting three steps back. Wait, so who are you? You ran a dealership, then you did this. Oh, it didn't work out. Are you trying to hide the fact that you failed? No, I'm not. I'm not trying to hide that. Like, it was so hard for me to, like, I felt misunderstood. And so I sort of just went to first principles and I sat, you know, and I thought and I thought and I thought. And I said, what is the best way for me to explain my story and like unveil? It's like, I'm too deep now. I'm like a relatively influential figure in the auto industry. I don't want to just come out of the woodwork and be like, oh, this is my thing. Like, write a little paragraph. People are going to start like shitting on me. It's not going to make any sense. They're going to say, oh, you're trying to hide your past, which I'm absolutely not. I take super pride in like my past and my successes and my failures. And so I said, the only way I could possibly do this where my words will not get lost in translation. No one can write a hit piece about me that's going to make me look bad, like whatever. And I control my narrative is by controlling my narrative and producing a video. And so I hired a video production company, spent 4 months and ideated this concept for a video called Who the Fuck is Car Dealership Guy? And on this video, which you can see on my YouTube, I pretty much explain my story as intimately as I can. I mean, my dad is in the video. He gets interviewed. People that I've worked with, yada, yada, yada. But long story short, it was all just me going to first principles and saying, I need to unveil at this point. It's actually hurting me. I believe that I can turn that around and I can use it, my story, my experiences, my vulnerability, my authenticity to my advantage. How do I do that? Let me produce a fucking video. Let me put it out to the world. Let me own my story. And then let me ride that from here on after. I have enough credibility. I've proven myself with some amazing guests on my podcast, with my quality of content, with my scale and just, you know, amount of followers. It's time to do this. And it worked out very, very well.
It is an incredibly well-produced video. As someone who consumes content basically all day, every day, I was like, oh, it's going to be like, here's my face. And it like wasn't, right? It was like, it was emotional. It like took you through the journey. What I was thinking about when I watched it was of timing. And so much of media is timing. You talked about it in 21. Hey, this opportunity, the auto industry was basically at its like crux moment. And I was thinking about that video. It is, if you're listening to this, go watch it. It's like a perfect example of like storytelling first principle. It also shows exactly the talent that you have as content. And probably you got some of that experience from pitching to investors, was my like actual feel when I watched that. It's like you just knew the through line. But I was thinking in that moment, would this video have had the impact with no distribution? I was actually thinking about it as a case study of like, if someone came to me and was like, hey, I want to go launch my brand. No one knows who I am. I work at this company. I'm fine telling my identity, but I have this amazing backstory and I want to become the face of the industry. And they started with that video. I don't think it resonates, was my take. But I'd be curious, like, what about the timing of that mattered so much, do you think? And if you had to go backwards, would you done things like differently or not?
This is a great question because I consider myself a sponge and I love scrolling Twitter because I'm picking up ideas and opportunities. And so I think like a year ago, Sam Parr launched Hampton, and he did something very interesting when he launched Hampton. And you probably know this because he probably did this to you too. He DM'd me a week before. And he said, hey, Yossi, on this day at this time, I'm going to do a post about a new business I'm launching. Would you mind sharing it? I promise I'll repay the favor. It would mean the world to me. You know what I told him? I said, absolutely, I'm going to share it. I'm going to support you. Why did I do that? Well, first of all, I want to help him out. Second of all, he was very thoughtful and he came to me a week before. It wasn't just an impulse, last minute, like DMing everyone on his list, right? He came to me a week before. I could tell that, you know, he was thinking, he was thoughtful, and he cared about this. So what did I do with this video? First of all, a month before it launched, right, I retained like a PR firm. And I said, here's like we put up a story, we pitched it. So we wanted to get some mainstream media as well. But we all know that that doesn't actually get you the distribution that social does. That's just like it's a nice to have. It adds more legitimacy, whatever. Great. We got that. We got Forbes. We got a couple other things. Amazing. Great articles. But then what I did was, after 2 years of being on social, on Twitter, on this platform, right, meeting so many people, right, interacting with them, building true relationships, right, never asking anyone for anything, I actually DM'd 150 people. And I said, hey, Adam, I think I actually DM'd you as well. I said, Adam, would you mind sharing this video? It would mean a lot to me. I'm revealing finally. It's a big day for me. Guess what? 99% of the people responded and said, absolutely. And then guess what happened?
It's launch day. I'm on stage. One of the guys that works with me, Cole, is in the back room and he posts a video. And I tell him, I said, Cole, please like follow up with everyone. Let's make sure this happens. Let's say we get it. Well, guess what? We launched a video and 150 people of the most influential voices on Twitter all engage with it, all share it, all like it, all watch the video, and it takes off. I mean, it was just went ballistic. It did like a million impressions in like the next couple of days. I go into every conversation now, right, with people that know who I am or CardioShip guy, and it's like, it's just an absolutely incredible tool. When you enter a conversation, people know your story, they know who you are, they know where you're at. I mean, I can't tell you how much it just pushes you and gives you so much opportunity. And it's like, I went from starting three steps behind to now starting like two steps forward. And I would just say it was the best thing ever because it worked out really, really well. And I highly recommend it. But it took actual building relationships with people. I never set out to build relationships and, you know, you say, but when the time came and I knew that I actually needed help from the community stood up and it worked out.
The underlying root of that is if someone's like, well, yeah, but no one's ever going to respond. And I mean, you built those relationships. That was years in the making. And I think there's a difference of like being in your text group where you like, hey, everyone boost me up a little bit here versus being like, this is a moment that's going to change my life. If it does well, please help and support. And that launch was just like perfectly executed. Now, today, fast forward, this week of recording, you announced your first creator for Car Dealership Guy, which was always on the roadmap. From what we talked about, it's one of the most influential people in the consumer sales, kind of car sales side, mostly on Instagram and TikTok. Perfect pairing for you as a LinkedIn and Twitter person, I think is a perfect hire of like no cannibalization, but same audience. It allows you to do so many great, great things. Creators and expansion always sound great. Typically, operations, scalability, personalities, they all come into play. I know you've kind of put your time into that. How are you thinking about the brand as you make these new other creators and brands within that, managing and operating that? What's kind of your sauce and plan?
Before even, you know, signing another creator to our newly launched network, you know, I started building leverage around myself. Everyone on our team today still works 80-hour weeks. And we're building, you know, we're slowly building and we're bringing more resources. But I've been like this. I mean, you know, content creation is a treadmill. And I think now that I've done this for, you know, 2.5 years, I actually think that one of the things that probably holds back a lot of people from succeeding is not being able to build leverage and resources and support around themselves before burning out. If you create content at the velocity that I'm creating content or any creator that's just growing fast is creating content, you can't do that forever. You're going to burn out at some point. And I think the key is to build support and resources around yourself as early as possible as you can, like without, you know, losing too much money so that, you know, you can properly scale, right? Well, I started doing something right. Initially, I started selling some ad deals. This was, you know, early on, wanted to start bringing some revenue into the business. And I started hiring very, very slowly. Two roles only. You're either selling content or you're helping me create content. Nothing else. I don't care what it is, how good you are. Zero. Practical. Sell content, create content. We went with an ad-driven model, you know, ads on podcasts, ads on newsletter, whatnot. Well, as I started scaling, I noticed that like we're building a really strong support system around myself. And I had all these other creators, automotive, you know, creators that, you know, were reaching out to me. Hey, I noticed that, you know, you're doing that, or I saw you did this. Like, how are you doing that? And it sucked, but I was like, look, I really can't help you. Like, I just don't have time, right? I'm working my ass off on my own stuff. Like you're doing amazing stuff, but I don't have time. But then one guy approached me, this guy, Russ. And I said, man, like this guy is so fucking talented. I would bet all my money on this guy that he's going to be like a multi-million dollar creator. And so again, I just kind of went, you know, I asked myself, you know, what's the situation here? How do I solve this puzzle of helping this creator, having an economic interest in it, right? So that I can productively invest my time and also helping me and my company, right? Where I know I want to build more leverage around myself and I don't want to have to create as much content at the velocity of creation I'm doing today in 10 years. And so I said, why don't I just fucking do all this support stuff for other creators, tack on some rev share that we're both comfortable with, build them up, oh, and by the way, along the way, there's going to, you know, create more synergies and a moat around my business, because now I'm bringing a creator that's complementary to me. They're on complementary platforms. They appeal to a complementary B2B audience, and I grab a bigger piece of the automotive influencer market share. And so it sounds kind of complicated, but these were just steps in my evolution of thinking and asking very simple questions, right? I can't create content myself forever. How do I bring more help? I have a support system that's not being fully utilized. How do I leverage them for other people? I could have launched a service business that sells ads for other people. Like, I could have done these things. But again, I wanted the highest return on my time. And the highest return on my time is a form of rev share or equity or however you want to think of it, with another creator that you believe in, that you think you can both uplift each other and have a bigger impact on the industry. And so that was why I launched a creator network. And like you mentioned, we brought on Russ Flipswips. He's one of the most viewed automotive influencers in the market. He focuses on, you know, car buying, sales, tips, skits, insights. I mean, just so, so talented. And even meeting him, Adam, it was a really organic process. We got to know each other. We had some calls. He was at my house for, you know, Friday night dinner. Like, we got drunk together. Like, it was a really fun, just like organic process. We really, you know, aligned on values, especially on wanting to uplift dealers and consumers. And so it was like a no-brainer. Like, we knew that we wanted to work together, and then we just had to get the deal done, and we got it done.
Barstool's done this so well, right? Like, you anchor around one and Xpred, and I know you're very familiar with that. But what's so unique, this goes back to the B2C brands, right? B2C to B strategy. Is he's pretty consumer. He's like what you would follow if you're buying your first car at 23, or, you know, like, it's like one of those interesting people on TikTok. You're like, oh shit, I didn't know that about, like, next time I buy a car, bookmark it, boom. Very consumer. But there's naturally, when you're coming from a consumer space with someone in the field, it's coming from B2B insights. And like, you've been able to make that connection. I think that's the hub and spoke model of like you being this anchor of like, I do car businesses, and then having this B2C to B moat around you with all these other connections, financing in the future. Like, there's so many other ways to do it that people touch. It spreads audiences, it spreads your reach, and the narrative continues. Like, the vision for that is just so great, and it's going to continue to take off. You touched a little bit on monetization. You primarily do advertising today. From what I've seen, you've been filling up. It's always easy to tell in media. You've been filling up the podcast really well. You've had ads. What's kind of the plan for monetization as you scale and grow?
So monetization was very, very tricky, because you have to remember who I am. I am an insights-driven brand, right? People come to me because they want my insight. Insight is only valuable if it's objective, it's unbiased. That was also the opportunity in the market, right? People are like, oh, people ask me before, why don't you have an angle? I'm like, I have an angle. I was like, my angle is being down the middle, being objective. That is the opportunity in the market. I'm not emotional, right? I don't care about like right, left, up, down. Like, it doesn't bother. I could care less. I am trying to go down the middle because that is the value of my brand. And so monetization, starting it was a very tricky thing because a lot of people were giving me different advice and da, da, da. And here's where I ultimately landed, right? You know, I asked myself, look, if I'm going to build a profitable business, right, I need to sell to someone. I'm not going to not monetize to anyone. And what felt most authentic to me and what I believed in, the way I wanted to monetize, was I said, I'm going to monetize to the automotive industry, to automotive vendors, people that I don't believe are, first of all, like a core part of my insight. It's not every day where I talk about like, this, go buy that product or this. Like, I usually talk about like the market, where it's heading, stuff like that. So I felt like if I monetize, you know, automotive vendors and people that support the auto business, right? It's a $1.2 trillion industry. You have tons of vendors that support dealerships and whatnot. That is going to be the least adversarial. It's like super easy. It's not controversial. I said, yeah, that's the route I want to go down. And so I did that. Now, just as importantly, what didn't I do? I did not ever take a dollar from a car manufacturer. And that's very important, because when we talk about the opportunity in the market again and my value that I bring to the market, I'm not going to name names, but I can tell you that a lot of the big automotive media companies take lots of money from the car manufacturers. That is a problem. The establishment, they run that network, they have control. Even if you don't think they have control, they have control. And again, it's not everyone. There's some great publications that are not involved in that, but it's a lot. And so another piece that went into my thinking and this evolved over time was, I don't want to be that. That is not the brand I want to build. I don't want to be scared to write about price drops at X manufacturer because I'm taking money from Y manufacturer. Like, I don't want to be that. It was a very tough needle to thread. And a lot of people gave me, you know, like, oh, it's not going to work or this. But I went very slowly and thoughtfully. I started, brought one advertiser, another one, and slowly built on top of that. And at the same time, I remained committed to an objective forum. If you're an advertiser with me, I will bring your competitor on my podcast. It doesn't matter. People know that. People have seen that. And I think that's what's allowed me to remain this forum that is viewed with objectivity and people really trust.
There's some kind of even upstart media companies today that have forgotten the, like, who aren't we question. And I think it's so important. We call it a block list. We have a block list where it's like, hey, we will not advertise with these folks for whatever reason. Could be our audience's own interest. Like, I fucking hate that company. Why would we ever advertise them? Or, hey, this is going to just create massive conflict. It's if you don't have that and you're an ads business, you have no accountability. Your accountability becomes your customer base and who pays your bills. And like, even so, you have your advertisers, you may bring on their competitors, but like they might email you and say, hey, can we get on the podcast? And like, you're like, well, I'll fit you in the future. You know, like no matter what, we all have to kind of like lean to the people that pay us. But the more boundaries you have that protect your audience's interests, the moat is actually created there. Because the most people don't do that, even in like the newer media companies. I'm like shocked by it. I'm like, how would you accept them? You know, everyone in your audience fucking hates them, but it just shows your intentionality. And I think that's my takeaway of this is I don't think people realize how big of, if you're not in the B2B automotive industry, I don't people realize how fast you're penetrating that market and how you're going to just fucking wipe them clean. But your quickness is actually just compounding from your intentionality of very methodical decisions, one by one by one, the last 2 years. And today it feels like, just like any compounding, it's just going up and to the right incredibly fast.
And I've made so many mistakes. I've posted stuff that then I deleted. And these are just things that are, you know, you're going to post 18,000 times. You'll make some mistakes along the way. You're not perfect. I really try to go into everything with a positive mentality. I don't want to put people down. That's not the person I want to be. I don't need that. Thank God I live a good life. I have a great family. Like I'm happy. And that's like, I don't need to go and try to put people down or kind of harm, like say bad stuff to get engagement. Like, I just don't want to do that. Like, I know my brand. I also don't want to be the biggest account, to be very, very clear. I know that my audience, they're coming to me for something specific, right? When the CEO of a top 10 United States bank in the US replies to my newsletter and tells me how they appreciated X, Y, and Z, to me, that means the world. Because that means that like the upper level audience, the people that make decisions, right, they are consuming my content. And it's really, really tough to get the attention of these individuals. And like, I have that and I'm growing it. Like, I don't want to be the biggest. Frankly, if I was the biggest account in automotive period, that would be a huge concern because it would mean that my content just got so diluted. Or I'm just totally appealing to the masses in ways that just don't make sense for my brand. But that's what it's all been about. And to be very clear, when I mentioned like, you know, like if you're advertising me, I'll still bring, you know, your competitor. I don't mean like, it's not like maliciously. No. Obviously my advertisers, they get a crazy return on their investment. Trust me, like they love it. And that's why, you know, our advertisers keep coming back. But it's what I'm trying to signal here is like, look, just because you advertise me, I'm not going to not put your competitor on my podcast. That's just going to be so dumb. As an advertiser, you shouldn't even want that because guess what's going to happen? People will stop listening to the platform and your ads will not be consumed and you're not going to get an ROI either. So I try to create a forum where it's, you know, it's as open as possible. Of course, if you advertise with me, you're my partner. Of course, I'm going to lean into you. Obviously, I want you to be happy. I want you to get a great return on your investment. But, you know, it's just a constant learning and evolution and tinkering and, you know, making a mistake, fixing it, trying to solve something. It's just continue to get... with my team, I say like, guys, every day, 1% better, 1% better. If we wake up in the morning, like I genuinely mean this, every single fucking day, we have to make one thing a little bit better. Every day. I don't care what it is. It can be the video in my intro. It could be the show notes. It could be as simple as like, oh, we're going to start adding pinned comments on the YouTube video. Whatever it is, guys, every single day get 1% better.
I think it's incredibly inspiring to folks like myself and others sitting here being like, this is how you disrupt an industry. Small team, industry experts, move fast, and that's how you move. What's the one thing that, you know, over this next year that you are really focused on trying to do better, or anything net new that you're looking to expand on besides the creators?
Launching vertical service businesses interests me, not as much as, you know, Nick Huber or stuff like that, just because I actually do love media. And I think that the opportunity in B2B automotive media is in the hundreds of millions, if not billions. So like, I am like happy and like, I'm focused as hell. You know, at Get a Car, I was looking for things to say yes to. At Car Dealership Guy, I have to say no 9 times a day. And, you know, yes, maybe 1 time a day, because there's so much opportunity in this media world, right? Someone comes to you, hey, I am a CFO here, I'm a CEO here, I'm a whatever, let's create a podcast together, let's create a new channel together, like, let's do an event together, let's launch this business together. There's so much exciting stuff on opportunities, and like, you really have to say no a lot. Although I am interested in, you know, expanding to services. I did pilot something, which was I launched a job board, which has been very successful. Again, simple, right? My advantage is I can do matchmaking. And so what businesses require matchmaking? Well, people kept reaching out to me, hey, I need a new job in the industry. And employers reached out to me, hey, can you help me find a new whatever? So I said, why do I have to like be this like middleman? Let me just put technology behind this and fucking let you guys go to work. I launched a job board. I made it 100% free, right? Like it's not, it doesn't cost. I mean, you can pay for upgrades, but to actually post on it, it's 100% free. Even just that, Adam, like the industry has appreciated that so much. Even if you say like, I'll never monetize that in any way, which I could care less about monetizing the actual job board, just the brand equity that it's built for me has been incredible. And so, you know, yeah, maybe at some point we'll launch like an executive recruiting function and, you know, we'll reach out to the people that sign up for a job board. But the point is like, the longer term you can think, the more your time horizon is long term and the more you can offer free and not trying to sap every single cent of your audience and truly do something for the long term, just the more you're going to compound, the more they're going to appreciate it, and the bigger audience you'll build. So all of our content is free, right? Our job board is free. Our podcast is free. I mean, everything is free. I have had paid content before. I cut it all out. I shut that shit down. I said, I am going 100% free. We are going to be an ad-driven model, and over time, we'll latch on some services. We'll bring on more creators and whatnot.
I love it. You're everything I believe in, you're executing and you're doing it live. And most impressively, for the first time, it took me 10 years of mistakes to learn some of those things. So I think everybody who's listening to this podcast is probably shaking their head like, damn. And yeah, just so grateful that you came on, and hope to have you on again soon, next time around, and to hear how much development you've had since then.
Appreciate you, Adam. This was awesome. I had a lot of fun. I actually haven't talked about this a lot, so this was refreshing for once, because you're right. Like, it kind of makes you think about, you know, what's next? What do we want to work on and whatnot? So this was really fun, Adam. Thank you.
No car questions this time, but maybe next time I'll let you know. I'll dig in of what manufacturers are struggling. But all right. Thanks so much. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks for listening. If you want deep insight and hot takes on the world of media, make sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend. I'll see you next time.